All right, welcome everybody. I have with me Alexander Mercuris, the Oracle of London, and we have a special guest here with us today. We are going to discuss the situation in Italy, a country, Alexander, that we have covered very, very often, a very important country in the EU. With us today is Simone Mariam. Simone, welcome to the show. Please tell people a little about yourself and, most importantly, where they can find you and your organization. Guys, I'm going to put everything in the link below in the description box where you can connect with Simone. Simone, the floor is yours. And then Alexander, jump in and let's get the show rolling.
Hi, Alex. Hi, Alexander. Thank you very much for having me invited in. So what else? My name is Simone Mariam. I work for Middolcino. Middolcino is a blog. It's basically a group of experts in different areas that of competence that try to cover what happens in the world, let's say. You can find us on middolcino.com, okay? And we do have two channels. One is on YouTube, and the other one is on Rumble. And you can find us as well on Telegram, like at Middolcino, like... You simply digit Middolcino on Telegram. You'll find us. That's who we are. We are a network, as I say. We are trying to construct a communication project internationally and nationally, in order to analyze, to comment, to forecast, if we can. Possible scenarios, you know. That's what we basically do. I am the journalist of the organization, so I am the face of the organization, you know, and I'm the one who usually do interviews with many guests, as you might have seen on our blog. That's what we basically do.
Awesome. So Alexander, Italy. Let's get to it.
Well, Italy, we've talked many times on the Duran about Italy. Italy is this big country. It's one of the oldest civilizations in Europe. It's the place where, in many ways, the ideas of Europe begin. It was a core state of the European Union. The European Union started with the Treaty of Rome that was signed in Rome in 1960. And yet this critically important country, somehow we always feel here on the Duran, it never is given the importance that it deserves, despite the fact that it's got a big economy, highly developed economy, very powerful industries. People always think when they talk about Italy, they think of all the amazing products that Italy produces, from Ferrari cars to all sorts of other things. And yet, somehow, it's never considered an important political force. And yet now, we get the sense that two things are happening in Italy. One is that the economic situation in Italy and the social situation are, for many Italian people, becoming extremely difficult. And the second is that the political situation is beginning to look fluid, at least so it seems to us at the Duran. At the same time, we don't entirely understand some of the features of Italian politics, which are very complicated, and we're delighted to have someone in Simone who can navigate us through the maze. So I'm going to first of all ask you, Simone, if you can tell us a little bit about how people in Italy feel at the moment about the general economic and social situation. I mean, one gets all sorts of stories about many young people especially, being out of work, about businesses being under stress, about things not working as they should. Is this perhaps a general feeling in Italy? Is that what people really do feel? Are they pessimistic? Are they optimistic? How are they at the moment?
Okay. So first, I got to say that when you say that Italian politics are very complicated from an outside observer, I think they are very complicated from an insider observer, from an Italian as well, because here it's a very messy situation, you know, like it's a very fluid situation. Secondly, trying to answer your question about the general feeling, feeling of Italian people about the economic situation. I would say that it's people are very preoccupied here, even people with security, you know, with like some security, with some savings, with a good job, you know, because we've been in a lockdown for over a year, and on the contrary of other like European country, here we didn't receive any money back. So the businesses have lost entirely almost a year of work, of business. So many people are out of business as well. So many people that previously, before the COVID, were having a good life and were having a business, were doing normal, were doing like all right in life, they're out of business, they don't have jobs. Job-wise, there is a big problem. Even before COVID, I think COVID is just like a burst of a bubble, you know, a bubble who burst because we did have problem in Italy, especially amongst youngster, you know. I myself can speak, you know, for this, you know, like how can I say? Wages are very low, let's say. Wages are very low, and the entrepreneurs seem not to care about the competence or the capability of people to work, you know, like they. And above all, the institutions are not responding very well because they step by step in the last 20 years they remove rights from the people, you know. So it's very hard and very difficult to find a job. Although you can find a job, you know, in north of Italy before the COVID, it was easy to find a job. The problem was that job wasn't a secure job, wasn't very well paid, and most of the time you had to work overwork, you know, make extra hours without being paid, and sometimes you work in black. How can I say? You work that's a big problem of our country. Yes, there is a pessimistic feeling in Italy because things seem not to go very, very, very well. Above all, with these COVID restrictions, they are already. Trying to close it. They want to close down the country again. We don't know when it will happen. But they're trying to do it again. They are saying it on. They're claiming it on newspapers. The virologists. I'm sure you have the same in the UK. These virology. They are stars. They are more famous than Jesus Christ, almost as John Lennon would have said. But they are claiming, they are saying the infections, the curve is skyrocketing. We have to be careful. They even use the victory of Italy, you know, to try to make people culpable of just having fun and having gathered together, you know. So this is another point that stressed people out a lot, you know, because no jobs, and you might get closed again, you might get locked down again. I mean, how am I gonna supposed to live, to eat, to do things, you know? Not all of the people have a secure job, you know. Many people have to go out every day to get their life, you know, to get their money, to earn money, you know.
What I find very interesting about Italy, and this is where I find it's different, at least to the outsider, from countries like France and maybe even Germany and other places, is that at the same time as one does get the sense that people in Italy are very disheartened and very demoralised, you don't get protests, at least we don't hear about protests, strikes, people active in the way that we saw with the yellow vests in France, and, you know, was very common in Greece, of course, and things of this kind. And as used to be very common in the Italy, which I remember. I mean, the Italy of the 1970s, which is I used to know very well. I used to travel to Italy a lot in those days. That was a place where, you know, there were protests, there were demonstrations, there was all kinds of things going on, strikes, all those sort of, that kind of dynamic political activity on the streets, which seems to have ended in Italy. Have you any idea why that might be? And is my assessment of this a correct one?
This is a mystery for me as well. This is a mystery for many Italians as well. We don't understand why the population is sleeping. It seems that the country is falling asleep and nothing is happening. Although something is moving, because we had a few big gatherings, like in Milan, in Florence, and in order to warn the government that this couldn't this kind of behave can't carry on any longer, you know. But you are right. Compared to France, compared to Germany, and maybe compared to the UK, Italian people are more, I don't know, let's say tolerant. I don't know. They tolerate this kind of abuse, let's say, in a more submissive way. That's a great question that I don't know how to answer myself, you know, because I'm very active, you know. I try to understand, to engage people, and I see. I mean, if you walk through the street, it's very depressing, you know, people wearing masks all over, you know, people are talking, you go in a bar, they're just talking about vaccination, like, it's like they shouting around, like very, very personal things that, and yes, it's not an easy situation, let's say.
I mean, is it because people still have faith and hope in the political system? Do the political parties still, perhaps, do they still see them as a mechanism to go forward and to achieve things there? I mean, I say that because, you know, again, this time last year, when we'd started a programme like this, we'd have been asking you a lot about, you know, what does Salvini represent? Does he perhaps convey hopes to people in Italy? And yet, today, even he seems to have become a sort of faded figure in some ways.
Yes, I mean, let's say, Italian people don't. I mean, many Italian people don't trust anymore the Italian political system, because they see it like as corrupted, and they see it depend too much dependent from Brussels, let's say, and that's why Italian people don't really trust the government, the institutions in general, because I think the problem of Italian problem is not just politics, you know. It's just, I mean, everywhere in the world, politicians are corrupted. They do just their own business, you know. They work for they have their own friends, and they do this kind of stuff. I think Italian people are they don't have faith anymore in the institutions, you know. Because, I mean, I think it's much, much deeper, the problem of Italy, you know. It's an institutional problem, you know, like that what make people very, very disappointed about everything, you know. I'm very pessimistic. And to answer about Salvini, it's very cryptic, and it's a mystery, you know, because before, he looked like a warrior, you know, for the people. He was like walking around the crowds, you know, like he was, he was very popular. And now he seems to have changed his position, and he seems to have become pro-Europe, you know. We can't really say that for sure, because I don't personally know him. But it seems to be like that. I want to say a thing about. I remember, because about the previous government, you know, the League and the Five Stars Movement government, you know, like there was like a Italian journalist, a famous Italian journalist, Giannini. said in an interview on La Sette, that's a famous mainstream Italian channel, that the elites were pushing for Democratic Party and Five Star Movement government. You know, why they did that? Why was the Democratic Party and Five Star Movement government born? Why was it born? There was a need to preserve a world order. You know, that's what this journalist said. Anything that represents a threat to the established order is seen with concern by the elites. And Salvini, at that time of the Five Star Movement League government, was seen as a threat. So, at some point, he changed, and he was very, very pro-Draghi as well. And they formed this big government, and we don't know, we don't actually really know what they want to do, because even Draghi is very cryptic, you know. You can't read him, you know. You can't say anything, you know. His face is completely blank, you know. You don't understand him. He doesn't even speak a lot to the country, you know. He doesn't speak. Very few intervention, and that's it.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me, actually. Can I just say, I mean, we'll come more to Salvini in a moment, but the Five Star Movement is a force that, in politics, I just wasn't able to make any sense of at all. I just didn't understand what it was, whether it was left-wing, anarchist, just a group of people coming together. I don't know. I just wasn't able to make any sense of it. But could you just tell us a little about the Democratic Party of Italy? I mean, this seems to be the major establishment party in Italy now. I mean, what is it exactly?
Yeah, they are. Actually, you said the right thing. They are the establishment party. Democratic Party it seems to be linked to France. But why am I saying that? Because you find just on Wikipedia, if you go through the names that are a part of the Democratic Party, you see that they have some connections with France, like Enrico Letta, for example, or another one is Sandro Gozzi. They even serve the French government. So we think they have some connections with France, and they have a direct connections with Brussels, you know. The Democratic Party is a minority party, but they always in power. They always find a way to get in power, you know. I come from a region, like Emilia-Romagna, that it's, how can I say, the base of the Democratic Party, you know. Maybe because of the old Communist Party, I don't know, I'm not sure about that. My grandfather used to be a communist, you know, used to claim to be a communist, you know. But, you know, things evolve and these things and that's it. But the Democratic Party is the establishment party, and they have many connections. I remember even one interview from a member of the parliament belonging to the Five Star Movement. I remember in this interview that this member of the parliament was saying that When they gathered together with the Democratic Party, the Five Star Movement were new to everything, you know. So they didn't really know what to do. While the Democratic Party seemed to move very well in the palace, you know, along the palace with the connections and these things. So yeah, and they've been in power since 2011, yeah. You know.
I mean, it's very interesting because, as I understand it, the Democratic Party evolved out of the former Communist Party of Italy, which I remember very well, the party of Enrico Berlinguer, as there was the leader when I was, you know, young. And before that, you can go all the way back to the various Togliatti and all those people. So that party was very loyal in its origins to the Soviet Union and to all this. And what it seems to me that you're now telling us is that the Democratic Party is now very loyal to other countries, like France. It has a connection to France, and it is loyal to the European Union in some form, but it's not loyal to Italy itself, even though it is the representative of the establishment of Italy.
Yes,
would this be a correct summary of it?
It seems not to be. It seems not to be very faithful to Italy, it seems, because, it's very well connected with Brussels. And you can even find, like, some tweets from, like, if you read on Twitter, you know, you go on the account of some members of the Democratic Party, and they are just pushing for, like, this LGBT agenda or this kind of... They care about this very, very... useless topic, let's say. I mean, it's fine that homosexual people, they have their rights, but they are already protected by the Constitution. I don't understand why you carry on with this kind of thing. And above all, Italian people are not really interested in this, you know. It's not like, we're not like the Anglo-Saxon countries, you know. We don't really care about these kind of things, you know. We don't really, there are homosexuals, there are transsexuals as well, but people don't care about this. People are very, 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 very fast about that. They are very, they're not happy with that. They're not happy with that, you know.
That's what the
Democratic Party is caring about, you know. It's like they became like the radical party of Pannella. You remember Pannella, if you know something?
Absolutely.
Yeah, Pannella always had the 3%. Because he always treated this kind of useless topic like cannabis, homosexual, and these kind of things. Become that, you know. They become the party of Pannella, you know. They become the radical party. They care about immigrants. They don't care about Italian. And that's we're asking ourselves, why are they doing that?
So which is today the party that stands in Italy for... Italy for the sovereignty of the country? Which party more than any other stands for that sort of thing?
This is a good question. This is a very good question, because it's very difficult to answer. We think that the only party might be able to be on the side of the people might be Fratelli d'Italia, Brothers of Italy. I mean, Brothers of Italy slowly but gradually grew from 1.9% in 2013 to over 10% in the last, even more, even to over 15% in the latest polls. They have a social right electoral program, you know, and not just neoliberal, you know. And this is very, very attractive to people. People are very, very keen on it, you know, because they are patriotic. They care about the made in Italy, you know. They care about our own country, and they seem to be. I'm saying they seem to be because sometimes they are ambiguous as well, you know. It's difficult to read them. They seem to be patriotic and on the side of the people.
Mm. What about their leader? What sort of a person is she?
I mean, Giorgia Meloni.
Is she a charismatic personality? Is she somebody who could take the kind of place that Salvini seemed to have for a time?
I mean, like Giorgia Meloni, I think she's charismatic. If she grew from 1.9% to over 15%, I think people are listening to her, and that. Starting understanding that she's got something interesting to say, and something like that maybe can help them, you know. And that's why she's growing a lot on the polls, you know. I don't know if she's well prepared or not. She seems to be a prepared person. She seems to. I mean, her intervention on her speech on Parliament are all like focused intervention, you know. She's saying reasonable things, you know. She's not pushing for example, compulsory vaccines. She's not pushing for this kind of things. She's opposing, you know, to the mainstream narrative. We will see if she is the one, you know. We will see.
Because as I said, the comparison that one has to make is with what has happened in Spain, which is another, you know, Latin South European country. This is the one that we see in, at least here in Northern Europe, which is that in Spain we had a very, very popular mayor of Madrid who took an anti lockdown position, has won a runaway victory in a mayoral election there. We see also the rise of what is a sovereigntist party, which I think is actually a rather more hardline and more right-wing party, perhaps, than the Fratelli are, the Brothers of Italy are. But does she have the same ability to speak to people, to communicate with them, the same kind of charisma that Salvini used to have? I mean, you know, you used to see pictures of Salvini on a beach, for example, and used to be mobbed and people talking to him like he was a sort of rock star almost. I mean, does she have that kind of effect on people?
I have to be honest, I don't think she's got the same charisma as Salvini. But I think she's got her own style. And I mean, like, Fratelli d'Italia is more popular. Like, you can easily find online. Fratelli d'Italia is very popular on the south more than because the north of Italy is all for the league. You know, like the main regions of the north, the richest region of the north are from the league. The south is more keen on. Fratelli d'Italia, yeah, due to good reason, you know, like the Northern League in the south is not very well seen, although they became national, you know, not all the people are keen on like accepting in them, you know, because they've been shouting for years like the south was robbing, you know, Italy, that they want to succeed and this kind of thing. So but I don't think she's got the same charisma as Salvini, but I think she's got, as I said, her own style, and I think she can do well. But she has to sometimes I think she should be a bit more clear in what she's saying, you know, because sometimes her position, we don't understand her position, you know, it seems to be like a bit ambiguous. That's what I can say about her.
How is Salvini reacting? How does he respond to the rise of the Brothers? I mean, does he see them as a threat to himself? Does he see them as a threat to the league? Is the league trying to sort of fight back against the Brothers? Or is there a possibility that at some point the two parties, the league and the Brothers, might come together and form an alliance and perhaps even work together in a government?
I don't think Salvini sees Fratelli d'Italia as a threat. I don't think so, because they got different kind of different kind of voters. So, I mean, one is in the north and the other is in the south. So, like, basically, you know, like, I mean, they were already together, because in 2018 they went together on the elections. I mean, they won, but the coalition won, but unfortunately, because of the election law and the election system, they couldn't form a government. That's a good question about will they be together again? I don't know. Maybe the convenience might gather them again, might join them again, but I don't know if they will be. Now, Brothers of Italy is outside the government, and it's the only opposition, you know. So that's what I can say. They might be again together, you know, because, I mean, there are rumors, you know, that they always meet up, they always talk, they're always in connection, so... I mean, I don't exclude the possibility, but now it's very difficult to say, you know.
I have to say that I hadn't realised that the Brothers are primarily based in the south. And that is extremely interesting, because if this is correct, is it possible that you could start to see a situation where the Northern League dominates the north, the Brothers dominate the south, and the two come together and rebuild Italy? I mean, is this possible? I mean, do you think this could happen? I mean, it would seem to be an extraordinary possibility, but I mean, and a remarkable one, and an earth-shaking one. But is that a chance, do you think?
I wish. I mean, if you see the electoral map of Italy, I mean, they all. I mean, the right wing has almost all the region. You know, they got 15 region out of 20.
Yeah.
So they, I mean, the right wing is in majority compared to the left wing, and the Five Star Movement is imploded. So I mean, it's not even a party anymore. You know, we don't understand what it is. You know, like some entity like moving around the parliament. We don't know. They don't even have like connection locally. You know, no one knows. You know, sometimes during the election, like the election for the deputy, they didn't even show up, people, you know, so people didn't even find the person to vote for, you know. So it might be a possibility that these two parties gather together again and reform Italy. I wish, I hope. I'm not very keen on the League, because I don't really trust them, you know. They're very good in talking, but when it's time to act, I don't really trust them, because they have been said for a long time, we don't want the euro, we want to get out of the euro, we want to follow the example of Britain, and now they're saying the contrary. We want to change Europe from within. I mean, why are you saying that? I mean, they completely changed their mind. So this move is confusing people, because many people believe these two parties, this party, I mean, the League, and people are confused, you know, about this, because before you want to change, you want to get out of the EU, now you want to stay in and want to change from within. What do you want to do?
Yeah, well, I think Alex will agree with me that whenever a party starts to say that they're going to change Europe from within, you can tell with absolute certainty that everything will remain as always. I mean, I can remember David Cameron, who started, he became Prime Minister of Britain, and he claimed to be a Eurosceptic. And of course, that's what he said, that, you know, when he became Prime Minister, he suddenly said, well, you know, we're going to change Europe from within. And of course, in Greece, well, we have the absolute world champion in Mr. Tsipras, who was saying all those same things. I mean, he also came in, you know, saying he was going to do extraordinary things. And lo and behold, he was talking about how he was going to change Europe from within. And we all know how that ended. So I'm afraid that's always a very, very bad sign. But, you know, are the brothers a stronger, more anti-EU party, do you think? I mean, is this because I've always thought of it, Southern Italy, actually, as being, if anything, a more pro-EU region than the North. But I might be wrong about that.
I mean, on the paper, Fratelli d'Italia are anti-EU, anti-euro on the paper. We don't know if they really want to act. I mean, when they will have the possibility, we will see. Because, I mean, now we trust just by action, you know. We don't trust people by words anymore, because about the South, I don't know. I'm not sure Southern people are for the EU. I'm not sure. I mean, like, I live here in the north of Italy. It's plenty of Southern people, because here we got, like, industries, we got factories, and there are many families from the South living here for generations, you know. I'm telling you, many people are not very keen on the EU. I mean, like, I think most of the Italians are not very keen on the EU anymore. Above all, after the pandemic, you know, they don't really trust. Even people that before were trusting, you know, even people that were ingenuous, you know, thinking that, oh, we're all friends here, all together, beautiful. You know, we can travel around Europe without passport, and we can do this kind of. I mean, this kind of people are start questioning, you know. So the EU, there is a very big disappointment about in Italy about the EU.
How do they feel about Draghi? Real quick,
Italian like people.
Yeah,
you mean Italian people? How do they feel? They don't
about Draghi.
That's a good question. Some people are very pro Draghi. Some people. But some people think he's the savior, you know. You hear people saying that he's going to save us, he's going to do that, he's going to... Some other people are more critical about him. I mean, I gotta be honest, I still don't have understood him. You know, I don't understand Draghi. I don't understand what he wants to do. I don't understand what is its goal, because he wants Italy stronger in the European Union. He might want Italy stronger. He might want Italy to become a stronger actor in the fields, you know, like and be able to compete with Germany and France. But even if this happens, I think this is not good as well. This is not good for Italy because we're still in this cage. So Draghi is a mystery, you know, like for many Italian people, we don't, even because as I said to you before, he doesn't intervene, he doesn't speak, he doesn't say anything, you know, he's just got this big, massive entity formed by the Five Stars Movement, League, Democratic Party, and Forza Italia, that they're working together in the parliament. You don't understand what they're doing. They don't discuss anymore. Sometimes they discuss. I don't know. It's a mystery, Draghi, you know.
I have to say, I mean, Draghi for me is very much the sort of creature that you tend to find in Brussels. I mean, he's that obviously on steroids. But these people... give the impression of being enormously competent. They have a vast amount of qualifications behind them. They've worked in lots of institutions. I think he was in the World Bank, for example. And when you actually see them in action, they don't really amount to very much. So if he doesn't say very much, it's probably because he hasn't got very much that he does know how to say. And I find it puzzling, by the way, that Italy seems to produce so many of these people. I mean, you find lots of technocrats like this in Brussels from Italy, and that they seem to hold such enormous sway in Italy itself. I mean, there seems to be almost a sort of willingness on the part of Italians to accept these technicians. I mean, we had, was it Mario Monti, who was government prime minister some time ago, and people like that. So, I mean, I would expect
Federica,
nothing.
Federica
Mogherini, indeed. People like that, I would expect nothing from that class of people. I think they will do a few things, but again, things will remain as they are. And can I just say something before, just to finish this particular statement? I mean, I entirely agree with you, Simone, about Italy being in a cage. Because that's what it is. I mean, it's a cage which has been created through the EU structures and through the Euro and Economic Monetary Union. Again, the Italy that I remember from the 1970s and later was a country that used to register 7-8% growth. It was incredibly dynamic. And, you know, we had all of that political activity, the strikes, the protests, all the things that I was talking about. But they were also, in some ways, a reflection of a very vibrant society. And all that vibrancy and dynamism, both in the economy and in culture and in politics and in political activism, to me, has been drained away because of the way in which Italy, like so many other countries, is trapped inside these institutions. So if people are not going out protesting, it's probably because they feel, well, there's nothing to protest about, because if we protest, if we do the kind of things we used to do, then, you know, it's not going to change anything, because we can't change things in Brussels and in Berlin and in Frankfurt and to some extent in Paris, where the real decisions which affect our lives are made. And for me, Draghi is the epitome of this. He's not a politician. He's certainly not a politician that you would expect to see in a democracy. He's a functionary and a courtier within the political system. Anyway, that was a bit of a speech, but I don't know whether you have any thoughts about that.
Yeah, I think Draghi is a technocrat, like Monti and many others. And I think, as you said, people in Italy seem to accept it. I think people don't accept them, but people find them on charge, you know. So what they were, I mean, before the pandemic, even if Italy was in a cage, is in a cage, like as we said, even if the economy didn't go very well, I mean, there were problems, and many with youngster, with jobless. Italy was doing remarkably
yeah.
in 2018, 2019, in the condition it was. Do you understand
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah,
Italy
I
was
do
doing
understand.
Very, very well. I'm telling you, you know, like, as I said, I live in a rich area. People are, I mean, there are many industries and factories
yeah.
here around, you know. They're working a lot, they're exporting
yeah.
a lot. And at some point, they were even Italy was exporting more than Germany at some point, you know.
Yeah.
And Germany had
yeah.
all the advantages, you know. So try to think if you take away this advantage to Germany, what can happen, you know? I know this
yeah,
country is a sleeping giant, as you sometimes define. I know, I really trust my country, and I really think this country is one of the top countries in the world, you know? We have competence here, we have culture, we have history, we have everything you want, you know? Even, like, we have the sun, like, we have everything, you know? But, unfortunately, we are tied up, you know? To some regime that don't want us to grow, don't want us to develop, and they don't want us to do things, you know. And of course, you will find a society who's less vibrant compared to 50 years ago. Although there are still some very, very, as I said, remarkable examples around. There are some very intelligent entrepreneurs. There are some very intelligent technicians, artisans. There are some people that they don't want to give up. You know,
I completely agree. I mean, I think if Italy was outside its cage, it would surge. I mean, you'd see all the pent up energies of the last 10 years. They would burst out, and you'd see a massive renewed growth in Italy. The fundamental problem is escaping the cage. And that's perhaps something that we're going to come to in another program, because I think we've
been
speaking
for 40 years.
Yeah, that's why they keep it. Well, indeed, that's one reason. That's indeed why. But as I said, how do we get it out? And that's maybe something we'll talk about. I think we've had an excellent introduction. What we're going to do in future programs is we're going to focus more on the politicians and perhaps the sort of political battles and see whether anything can happen, because things are always going on in Italy, and you can help us understand these things. So there's a scandal, there's a party eruption in Italy. But also we can also look at the economics of Italy and understand that, you know, this is not a poor country. Many people in Britain still think of Italy as a poor country. I've never understood this, having been there many times, because it's a very rich country, actually. It's a very productive and creative country. But we can discuss all of that, and we can discuss its future. But can I say, for my part, I think this has been an excellent introduction. I don't know whether Alex has any things that he wants to ask, or perhaps?
Simone, where can people find you? Once again, where
yeah.
can people find you? We'll be doing more programs,
yeah.
guys, with Simone.
Programs.
But where can
yeah.
people find you? I'll put that in the description box down below.
Yeah, you can find us on middolcino.com or on our YouTube channel. It's the same name, Middolcino, on Rumble, on our Rumble channel that's called Middolcino, or on Telegram.
Nice.
All right. Simone, Mariam,
and Twitter as well.
Alexander.
Sorry, I was forgetting. On Twitter as well.
Twitter as well. All right, guys, I'll put all of that in the description box down below. Simone, thank you very much for joining us. We look forward to having you on again so we can discuss more about Italy and what's going on. Alexander, the Oracle of London. No.
Thanks.
No more needed. Nothing more to say there. Alexander, the Oracle of London. Take care, everybody. Have a great day.
Thank you very much. Have a nice evening. Thank you. Bye. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.